Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the August 21st edition of the County Chronicle, and again we'll start with the front page stories. Arcola City Council. Rotary proposes dog park, salaries discussed, by David Porter. The Arcola City Council again discussed proposed upgrades at Moore Park during a committee meeting Monday night. The new estimate for the projects under consideration is more than $760,000. The city anticipates applying for matching open space lands acquisition and development, OSLAD, grant through the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, which would cover half the cost, up to $400,000. Included in the proposal is a sensory play area that would be accessible to handicapped children. Also on the list is a half-mile loop of sidewalk and a new concession stand and storage buildings near the Ball Diamonds. The exact amenities are still being developed. Alderwoman Stephanie Helmuth suggested that a combination adult/child swing be included. Some special needs children are, quote, Velcro kids and need to stay close to someone while playing. It was noted that Tuscola's Urban Park has such a swing. Also discussed was a proposal by the Arcola Rotary Club to build a dog park on the southeast corner of the Old City Park. Rotary proposes applying for a matching grant through Rotary International that could provide $4,000 for a dog park. City Administrator Bill Wagoner said the city would probably need to kick up a little bit of money. Alderman Terry Foran said he thinks a dog park is a great idea. He said the area being proposed does not get a lot of use now, and there's space for a suitable dog run. It could be a pretty good dog park. Earlier, the Police Ordinance and Enforcement Committee of the Council discussed developing a plan to increase wages, especially in the police department. Chief Nick Suiting said it's getting increasingly difficult to find patrol officers. However, he said he's opposed to paying part-time officers more per hour than full-time officers receive. He said the city will be losing one of its part-time officers after the Broomcorn Festival in September. He said he had hoped to find someone who was already trained, but is not opposed to sending someone to the police academy to help fill slots. Wagoner said there's a multi-city survey being conducted that will show where Arcola stands in relation to other communities. Tuscola pays more than we do, but they have $1 million more in sales tax than we do. Wagoner said the salary issue may take several years to resolve, but there are other city employees who may need wage adjustments to make the city more competitive. He said there will be big changes in the Public Works Department soon due to expected retirements. Wagoner added that salaries for elected officials will need to be set in October ahead of the November election. Mayor Jesus Garza said he'd like to see merit increases for the city. Most of the time, the city increases the salaries across the board once or twice a year, but that's not fair to employees who work three times as hard. Wagoner said the city got away from its evaluation system and he would like to bring that back. He said he'd be looking at the city's budget, the comparison study, and merit raises to create a pathway to higher wages. Also discussed in committee was the dilapidated Richardson House at 239 West Main Street. The city has initiated litigation to force the owners to repair the home or demolish it. Wagoner said the house continues to deteriorate. Part of an exterior wall is missing, and one can see into the basement due to damage to the crawl space and sill plate. I'm sure it will get worse before it gets better, he said. He added the litigation is complicated by the fact that it will cause someone to be displaced from their home. In a letter to Wagoner from City Attorney Andrew Baquette, the lawyer said homeowner requested another 6 months to repair the house. I told him that was not acceptable. He said the homeowner has agreed in court that the house is dangerous. His plan can't be, I intend to fix it. The court hearing was set for October 10th. During the regular portion of the council meeting, school superintendent Dr. Tom Mulligan volunteered to help bring the various taxing bodies together to work on a solution for the city's tax increment financing, TIF, districts. See a separate story on page 1. The council approved a business district facade grant for Dale and Bonnie Yoder to provide 50% matching grant to improve signage. The council also approved a professional services agreement with Milano and Grundlow Engineers, LLC, as a grant administrator for the Southside Sanitary Sewer Project. Mitch Hardiek of Milano and Grundlow updated the council on several projects. Construction on the $1.4 million Libman School Street Improvement Project is expected to begin, being September 9th. After state grants, the city's contribution is expected to be under $116,000. He outlined several sanitary sewer projects for which the city is receiving grants exceeding $5 million. The article alluded to in the previous article is Mulligan Extends Olive Branch to Taxing Bodies Regarding TIF by Ben Crane. The subject of TIF, Tax Increment Financing, has long been a point of contention in the city of Arcola. The city had proposed an amendment to TIF District No. 6, which led to a confusing and contentious public hearing in late July. To recap, The taxing bodies had signed an intergovernmental agreement coupled with special legislation to extend both TIF-1 and TIF-6 by 12 years in 2014. Conditions applied, such as a clause that stated that the city of Arcola did not anticipate extending the boundary of TIF number 6 within the lifespan of the extension. This is where the confusion became evident, as neither the city attendees of the hearing or the TIF advisor hired by the city, Adam Stroud of PGAV Planners, knew the answer to this question. When does TIF number 6 extension begin and end? The County Chronicle had reported that the city administrator, Bill Wagoner, said that the city does not have to convene with taxing bodies, making the public hearing more of a courtesy than actual ordinance requirement. However, during the hearing, Wagoner seemed confused about the timeline of the TIF and stated that the taxing bodies would have a say, that their potentially unanimous decision was final. After a public hearing that left everyone in attendance scratching their heads and near silence from the city, that leads us to now, with Superintendent Tom Mulligan extending an olive branch to the taxing bodies. At the Arcola School Board meeting on Wednesday, he addressed the City Council on Monday with similar presentation. So, the big question there, where I think is where there at is, does the intergovernment agreement take precedence over the city ordinance, or does the city ordinance, you know, Mulligan question. I mean, I think there's a question that I think that if debate happens, I think it could really end up in some legal challenges, and I think that would be a really bad situation for the community. Mulligan went on to explain that he doesn't believe the taxing bodies would support the proposed amendment, and there would be some potential consequences. But I've shared those feelings that I think that, you know, the original proposal of this amendment of TIF number 6 is, I don't think we can move forward without significant challenges, if not legal ones. So, what does Mulligan propose? For the city to table the amendment to use TIF to increase enrollment at the school districts. I'm really concerned. You've heard me say several times that I feel that for us to be a competitive, viable high school, we really need 50 to 60 kids per grade level. We certainly had pockets of competitiveness, but it becomes tough in Class 1A now. We want to continue to provide all the opportunities that we provide academically and also be competitive athletically, which, let's be honest, that's important in the community. It's important that our community, we need to find a way to grow enrollment into the district. Not only that, though Mulligan used the city of Dietrich as an example of the model of how to use TIF to grow enrollment. Dietrich, you know, 14 years ago, they did a residential TIF in their district. They used all the TIF financing to do the infrastructure and all that. They sold lots to developers for $3,500. They sold lots to individual homeowners for $5,000. In 15 years, they have constructed 93 homes in the community. It took a while to get going, but once it did, it really, really grew there. The 13 years prior to that TIF project starting, they saw a 29% reduction over those 13 years in their student enrollment. Since then, they've seen a 42% growth in enrollment. The County Chronicle verified that information through the Business Navigator Alliance of South Central and Southeastern Illinois. Mulligan then called for the taxing bodies to convene to make a new intergovernmental agreement where the legal language is airtight, along with similar clauses from before, but also have a specific plan as to what a proposed TIF project is trying to accomplish. I mean, people can support things when they know there's a plan and they know what the benefits are going to be and how it's going to positively affect our kids and our community. You know, if we all sit down and share our mutual interest, I really believe we can come together to enhance not only the community, but really our school district, and to me, that's the only way forward, Mulligan concluded. At the Arcola Township meeting on Monday, similar sentiments were not shared among Township Supervisor Corky Clark, Secretary Deanna Shields, and Road Commissioner Mark Nackey. After asking the township what their position would be if the city went through with the proposed amendment, despite there not being a unanimous vote in support of it, Shields answered with one word, lawsuit. Both Clark and Nackey nodded in agreement. According to the township, they felt as though they were intentionally misled by the city back in 2014 when the agreement was signed and claimed causes were purposely omitted from the agreement, and they now feel misled. To them, the intergovernmental agreement was to add 12 years to TIF number 1 and TIF number 6 from the day they signed that document. We were told over and over again, 12 more years and it's over, Nackey exclaimed. However, township is willing to come to the table for discussions regarding the amendment or a new intergovernmental agreement, but are adamant that the TIF ends. The township has been vocal before about its opposition to TIF districts as it diverts tax revenues away from their coffers. However, the purpose of TIF is to use incremental increases in property values to encourage economic development, raising property values beyond what they would be without the TIF. When a TIF district is created, the tax revenue each taxing body receives within the district is frozen, so they continue to collect what they had received in previous years, but the incremental increases in tax revenue, theoretically caused by the TIF, goes into the TIF district for the duration of the district to further develop properties within the district. There is currently not a timeline for when the taxing bodies will meet or when the next TIF hearing is scheduled. The next article, Arcola School Board, District Projects Nearing Completion by Ben Crane. The Arcola School Board met Wednesday for their regular meeting. An update regarding numerous capital projects totaling over $2 million was heard. The roof had sprouted some leaks, but the problem had been solved by the time of the board meeting. Furthermore, the locker room project has about a week and a half of work left for the finishing touches. The locker room can be occupied beginning on August 26, as soon as the plumbers have finished their work. There was also a gymnasium leak, which had also been solved. Floors have dried to sufficient levels. According to the update, no damage was reported. The update has made note that constant humidity had actually helped the gymnasium floor not be damaged. So you're going to say it's a good thing we don't have air conditioning, Superintendent Tom Mulligan laughed in reply. Other items on the agenda, such as minutes, the treasury report, and the bills and payrolls, were approved. The board then accepted the resignation of Tommy Edelman as the sophomore class sponsor. They approved the employment of Amber Oliver as volunteer volleyball coach, Ed Collar as volunteer assistant coach, Kim Schneider as sophomore class president, Daniela Coombe as student council advisor, and Hugo Garza as high school assistant track coach. Elementary principal Amber Behrens, assistant elementary principal Kyle Shea, and junior high and high school principal Nick Lindsay all stated that the first day of school ran as smoothly as possible and the district is excited to get the school year started. Mulligan then made a 12-minute statement regarding the recent TIF amendment hearing at the Arcola City Council, which you can read about. Finally, the board approved their tentative budget and set the budget hearing for September 11th at 7 p.m. The last main page story, Child Porn Suspect Released Pending Trial by Ben Crane. Judge Jeremy Ritchie has allowed a child pornography suspect to remain free pending trial with numerous stipulations. The judge made the ruling Thursday in Moultrie County Court in the case of former Lovington grade school teacher Chris Davis, who was accused of possessing 40 images of minors engaged in sex acts. He reported he has said he has collected 5,000 to 10,000 of such images. A detailed timeline of Davis's arrest was revealed on Thursday as Judge Ritchie mulled over the prosecution's petition to deny pretrial release. Assistant State's Attorney Elizabeth Dobson addressed the court, explaining that a cyber tip, which was previously discussed in an Illinois State Police press release regarding Davis's address, had been forwarded to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The user in question had indicated there were certain pornographic files that had been sent into Davis's Yahoo Mail. This report ultimately landed on investigator Edward Wayne Powell of the ISP due to the location of the suspected child pornography. Dobson noted that when the NCMEC identifies something as child pornography, it is because the agency has located the person who in the images and are able to provide information confirming that it is a real person. The victim in the images is then afforded the opportunity to address the courts whenever they are hearing these cases to give the victim impact information regarding the use of their image in this matter. In short, the images were verified through NCMEC. Investigator Powell then used search warrants and other identification information to identify Davis as the person who was operating the cell phone and computer system where the alleged images of child pornography were located. When Dobson was explaining the background, Davis appeared emotionless. His pensiveness was evident. There was no head movement, scanning the room with his eyes. The only reaction that Davis had were several face twitches, but not in relation to any specific revelations made by the assistant state's attorney. According to Dobson, investigator Powell testified that during Davis's interview, he admitted to his crimes. Davis allegedly had kept the Yahoo account in question a secret while engaging in viewing child pornography daily, starting back when he was in college in 2009. The 13-year social studies teacher, who has a wife and two kids, alleged told police that he had accumulated an estimated 5,000 to 10,000 pornographic images and enjoyed the thrill of the chase. The prosecution team is currently working with 40 images where Dobson insinuated that more were to be found. Davis had been a coach for various recreational activities, including youth baseball. None of the photos he is charged with possessing were of his own children or any local children, and he has not been alleged to have touched or harmed any minors physically. Dobson then described the images in revolting detail for Judge Ritchie in lieu of the judge viewing them. Davis's lawyer, Carrie Gibson of Bruno Law Offices, Urbana addressed the court and said that Davis's parents are supportive and willing to take all measures to ensure he comes home pre-trial. To deny pretrial release, the prosecution must prove that Davis is a threat to the community, even with the conditions in his release applied. There's a clear, ferocious addiction to child pornography that this defendant has, Dobson said. This is a pattern of behavior that is going on for multiple years. Judge Ritchie replied, to consider this a victimless crime would be the furthest thing from the truth. However, Ritchie ruled that conditions and mitigations could be applied to make Davis a non-threat for the duration of his pre-trial release, thus denying the state's petition to keep him behind bars pending trial. The conditions and mitigations are as follows: no internet or electronic device access, GPS monitoring, no contact with any individual under 18, barring his own children, cannot be present or within 100 feet of any school, park, playground, or where one or more children are gathered, has to report to pretrial services once a month, cannot leave Illinois, has to undergo a physiological, a psychological evaluation, and must comply with ongoing psychiatric treatment, must surrender firearms, must observe a curfew between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m., and not leave corporate limits of Sullivan except to his lawyer's office in Urbana. The remainder of the court proceedings have been assigned to Judge Gary Weber, where the court will convene at 9:30 a.m. September 20th for a status hearing, and then 9:30 a.m. October 8th for pretrial. We'll move now to the obituaries. Sandra Lee Sumners Hoffman, 83 years old, passed away peacefully on August 1st, 2024 at Lanier Village Estates in Gainesville, Georgia. The family would like to extend their heartfelt gratitude for all the condolences and kind words that they have received. Chris Flesser of the Villages, Florida, originally from Tuscola, age 93. If you'd like to remembrance, please do so with a donation to your favorite charity. Dennis Duane Terrell, 76, of Atwood, passed away at his home on Tuesday, August 12, 2024, surrounded by his family after succumbing to lung cancer. Funeral services were held Tuesday morning, August 20th, at the United Church at Atwood. Burial was in Mackville Cemetery in Atwood. Masonic rites were held Monday, August 19th, at Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood, with visitation immediately following. Michael Glenn Myers, 69, of Arthur, died at 8:30 a.m. Friday, August 16, 2024, at his home in Arthur, surrounded by his loving family. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 21st, at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, 320 North 21st Street, Mattoon, with Father John Titus officiating. Burial will follow at the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 20th, at the Schrader Funeral Home, 431 South Vine Street, Arthur. There's an article, Arthur Legacy of Love, CILA Open House, set for September 7th. The Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation will host an open house on Saturday, September 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the nearly completed CILA house located at 306 West 2nd Street in Arthur. The foundation board will be on hand to answer questions regarding the vision and plans for providing quality housing for individuals with intellectual disabilities from the Arthur community. There will also be guiding tours of the house, which has been made possible from the support and love of hundreds of generous contributors from the Arthur community, Central Illinois, and many other states. The Moultrie County Beacon will manage the day-to-day operations of the CILA house and will have staff present to discuss employment opportunities for anyone interested in a career working in a CILA community integrated living arrangement house. They will also share insights and answer questions for family on topics such as who is eligible for living in a CILA house, how do they become qualified to live in a CILA house, and what typical CILA house structure and activities look like. All Arthur residents are encouraged to stop by the CILA open house on September 7th to see what the combined prayers, encouragement, and financial support of our community has been able to accomplish. Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization working to generate funds to help build quality CILA housing for citizens of the Arthur community with intellectual disabilities. A second lot has been purchased at 512 North Beach Street in Arthur, and plans are being made to begin construction of a second Arthur CILA house in the near future. Anyone who would like to contribute to the ALOLF mission may donate directly to the ALOL Foundation's account at the State Bank of Arthur by mailing a check made out to ALOLF, Post Office Box 222, Arthur, Illinois, 91691, or online at www.arthurlegacyoflovefoundation.com. All contributions to the foundation are deductible for income, estate, and gift tax purposes. May God be glorified as we continue the mission to care for and provide opportunities for our citizens with intellectual disabilities and work together for the betterment of our community, the organization said. Back to School Bingo Helps Teachers in Villa Grove by Tony Hooker. Jackie Wells of the Camargo Township Library is always looking for ways to keep kids involved in library activities, but more importantly, in reading. Countless studies have linked the connection between good reading skills and success, both academically and in life. To this end, she worked with Villa Grove educators to extend the middle school book club in the summer months. During these conversations, it was noted that teachers pay for many things that they use in their daily classroom activities out of their own pockets. From this, the idea of Back to School Bingo was formed. The Chamber of Commerce quickly contributed $500 to the event, the Rotary Club kicked in $200, and the library made a $100 contribution of their own. As always, the Westray family offered to pitch in by hosting events. Kelly Vail, along with Lindsay Gunther, run the middle school book club, and they took the lead in selecting prizes that teachers typically purchase with their own money. We got some Amazon gift cards, and then we got pencils and fun erasers and sticky notes and that sort of thing, Vail confirmed. A lot of teachers have prize boxes in their room, so we purchased items we can put in there as well. Of course, not all the prizes will be just for kids, as Vail noted that in addition to the student-centered prizes, adult items such as tumblers, notebooks, coffee, and coffee cups would also be added to the prize list. There might even be some wine, Vail added with a laugh. Vail noted that Carla Westray is a former teacher herself, and so hosting the event at JR's seemed like a great opportunity for both the teachers and the establishment. I can't say enough about Villa Grove's ability to come together to support things like this, Vail stated. There are always people who want to help when asked. There's another article titled Walking Across America by Trudy Feyerizen. This past Monday in Arthur, a very unique married couple came through town, Ryan Malone, 33, and Carolyn Ronning, 29, who were walking across America. They came into the local library and introduced themselves, wondering where they could park their special three-wheeled cart they travel with while they use the computer. Astonished at their venture, and with so many questions, an on-the-spot interview ensued. The couple started their journey in Los Angeles, California on March 1st and hope to be in Times Square in New York City before Carolyn reaches her 30th birthday on October 7th, a trip of 3,500 miles. Why embark on such an ambitious endeavor, you might ask, especially completely on foot 24/7, just the two of them with no extra vehicle or support alongside? Ryan said, "We wanted the survival mentality of having to figure out every day where to stay and what to eat. That's just part of the experience. It really forces you to challenge yourself and learn." The couple is vegetarian, so they survive on trail mix, granola bars, nuts, tortillas, peanut butter, and lots of water. They carry a lot of food with them in their cart and frequent gas stations to replenish their stash. Once in a while, they get fruits and veggies, which is a treat. Ryan said, "We just take a multivitamin in the morning and hope for the best." They average about 20 to 25 miles a day. The longest was 36 miles, which takes an average of 8 to 10 hours. They avoid busy highways and interstates because some have been killed walking across America that way and took Route 66 and more back country roads. Ryan commented tongue-in-cheek, "If we wanted to go to the interstates, we would just take a car." The couple enjoys the variations of the countryside, landscapes, small towns, and rural communities they get to take in along the journey. Both of them expressed that this trip has restored their faith in humanity, as many have been quite generous to them. They knocked on a farmhouse door in Texas and asked if they could camp on their land for a night, and enthused children brought out popsicles for them and listened to their adventures. Many churches they contact allow them to camp out at their facility. Once a week, they seek to stay in a hotel to get a shower. Carolyn commented, "We wanted to connect with people and have experiences that help you grow as a person." It's quite a unique way to live life, working various jobs to make enough money and then go out and travel for months. But it's a lifestyle Ryan and Carolyn have embraced for this season of their life and truly enjoy. Ryan got the travel bug early in life as he perused through world book encyclopedias and envisioned himself one day going to the places he was reading about. On his 16th birthday, he told his parents he wanted to travel alone to another country. He's from Australia, so his parents flew him to Malaysia for 5 days and the travel bug bit. Later, after graduating from the University of Sydney with a Bachelor of Arts in American Studies, he traveled around the world. Carolyn is from Noblesville, Indiana, and received a full-ride scholarship to the London Conservatory of Music as a cellist and performed in different chamber music groups upon graduating. The couple met when she was living in London and Ryan was on his trip around the world. The rest is history. From Arthur, they walked to Arcola and then to Newman. If you want to follow their journey and learn more about them, you can go on Instagram at hashtag One Life Let's Go and with the same name on Facebook. Carolyn goes by Kara on those posts. They often place posts on local Facebook pages to find a place to stay for the night. Once in Jefferson City, Missouri, almost 100 people responded. Another article, 51st Arthur Amish Country Cheese Festival. The 51st Arthur Amish Cheese Festival opens early Saturday morning, August 31st, with a pancake and sausage breakfast at the Firehouse on Route 133 West. Arthur Fireman will serve pancakes and sausage from 6 to 11 a.m. The 10-bay facility has plenty of room to serve the hundreds of people who flock to the annual event. This is a good opportunity to have a delicious breakfast prepared by members of the Arthur's Volunteer Fire Department. They cook the sausage patties over an open flame, and the pancakes are served hot off the griddle, prepared in sight. The firemen served a record 1,600 meals in 2018, destroying the previous record of 1,400 meals served in 2011. In 2023, they served 1,500. How much food does it take to serve breakfast to that many people? The firemen prepared and served approximately 1,300 pounds of sausage, 500 pounds of pancake mix, 110 gallons of orange juice, and 60 pounds of butter during the 5 hours they worked for breakfast. Daily events, sidewalk sales, and food, flea market, and craft vendors are open for business at 9 a.m. on Saturday and Monday at 10 a.m. on Sunday. The festival closes at 7 p.m. on Saturday, 5 p.m. on Sunday, and 3 p.m. on Monday. Vendors occupy a two-block area of Vine Street and parts of Illinois, Hickory, Walnut, and Progress Streets. Children of all ages will enjoy 25-8 Extreme Mobile Extreme Sports and pony rides at Artie's Party Zone, South Vine and West Progress. The pony rides are available Saturday and Monday only. Amish buggy rides will be offered from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday and Monday. The rides depart from the return of from the, and return from the drive in the north side of the Welcome Center. Saturday only events. The first ceremonial cheese giveaway begins at 9:51 a.m. under the cheese tent, located at the intersection of Vine and Illinois Streets. Local officials, queens, and guests serve free cheese slices and crackers to thousands of festival visitors. Teams of four square off on the Cheese Festival rink at 12:30 p.m. in the 24th Annual International Cheese Curling Championships. The rink is located at the intersection of Vine and Illinois Streets. Teams wanting to participate should report to the air around 12:15 prior to register. The 24th Annual Cheese Eating Nationals begin at 2:30 p.m. under the cheese tent at the corner of Vine and Illinois Streets. Everyone is encouraged to participate. Those who want to participate can register throughout the day, but definitely 15 minutes prior. The second free cheese giveaway will be held at 4 p.m. at the cheese tent. Following the last cheese giveaway of the day, vendors downtown will remain open through 7 p.m. Saturday only events. Sunday is traditionally family day at the Arthur Amish Cheese Country Cheese Festival. Begin at 10 a.m. with a community worship service. The service is hosted by Arthur Ministerial Association and local churches will be held at Gazebo Parking Lot. Everyone is invited and encouraged to attend regardless of church affiliation. Merchant sidewalk sales, Artie's Party Zone attraction, Cheesy Hollow, and flea and craft and food vendors open at 10. Vine Street Christian Church will be holding their ice cream social, Heavenly Dips of Homemade Ice Cream, A Taste of Heaven on Earth, on Sunday, September 1st from 1 to 4 p.m. in the church basement. They'll be serving vanilla, chocolate, and pineapple with a variety of toppings. This is sponsored by Christian Women's Fellowship. All proceeds go to their outreach ministries. The two cheese giveaways Sunday will be held at 10:30 a.m. and 2 p.m. at the cheese tent. Creative Minds will compete in the 10th annual Arthur Amish Country Cheese Festival Cheese Carving Championships. Registration is at 12:30 p.m. and the competition starts at 1 p.m. The event will be held at the cheese tent intersection of Vine and Illinois Streets. The competition is limited to 10 participants who must be 16 years of age or older. The competition is sponsored by the County Chronicle. Arcola Kitty Tractor Pull Circuit returns to conduct the annual Cheese Festival Children's Tractor Pull. Registration begins at 12:30 p.m. on East Illinois Street near the Cheese Tent. Competition starts at 1:30 p.m. at the intersection of Illinois and Hickory Streets in Cheesy Hollow. Cheese Festival closes at 5 p.m. Monday-only events. The Arthur Lions Club opens the final day of the festival with breakfast from 6 to 10 a.m. at the community building, 120 East Progress Street, one block east of the Welcome Center. Arthur Women's Club will be up early conducting registration for their annual rat race. The event includes three races, a 10K run, 5K run, and 5K walk. Registration begins at 6 a.m. at the Welcome Center. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.